Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Didn't see that,
poor
Kevin.
Chris.
Okay, you hear this song?
Yes, I do. I love this record. Yep.
Okay. So here's the backstory. Kanye West wanted to meet Paul McCartney.
Okay.
He just, you know, appreciated all his musical genius. And so McCartney came to Kanye's studio at Kanye's request, and they just sat around and talked for a couple hours. And they had Paul picked up a guitar, and Kanye was they were just talking and riffing and having fun.
Yep.
So fast forward to like 6 months later, Kanye releases this song. And it on the song it says by Kanye West, Rihanna, and Paul McCartney. And McCartney calls him and goes, "Kanye, I never recorded a song with you. Why did you credit me on this song?" And Kanye says, "Remember that day you were just sitting around goofing on your guitar?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I recorded those tracks and put them in the background on this song." McCartney didn't even know that he was
doing it.
And that's the finished product. And they ended up playing it live on the Grammys. The three of them ended up going live to play the song on the Grammys.
That. I love that record. That's a great song. Great song. All right. So Heather Dinich is going to join us here in a minute. By the way, we did those pictures, the Face app, which apparently I saw them do it on, whose show? Mina did.
They've done it on every show.
They've done it on every show.
Yeah.
So we did it, and we're taking it one step further. Lindsay has put us both on Tinder.
And she'll keep us posted to see if anyone actually swipes.
Oh, somebody's
right.
Going to swipe right
at
me.
You'll get tons of swipes, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, Brittany is very good looking. Brittany's a looker. And as Chris Morales said, better looking than some of the women he's dated.
I'm surprised Chris admitted that.
poor Morales.
Yeah. I do. By the way, I completely disagree with you that you and I make attractive women. I think we are as unattractive as it gets.
All right. So college football. I saw this morning.
By the way, Heather, I completely agree with Heather on this. I think it's going to be an incredibly high bar to clear.
Yeah. Heather Dinich joins us, college football writer for ESPN. Hey, Heather, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We are hanging in there, Heather. And the point of your article that's up now on ESPN.com, it's going to be hard for college football to pull this off. Do they know that? It seems like they are going full speed ahead, but you talk to more of these people than we do. It almost seems to me that they have a blind spot about how hard this is going to be. Do they know what you wrote in your article? Are they conscious of it?
I try to make them aware of the things that I write. I do. Nobody listens to me, guys. Not even in my own house. look, they are optimistic, but they're also realistic. That's what Oklahoma Athletic Director Joe Castiglione told me. And I think that because there's such a growing public perception that life is returning, that the conversations about the difficulties you're speaking of have kind of fallen to the wayside publicly. But behind the scenes, these commissioners are still doing things and talking about contingency plans that they were talking about 2 months ago. They're still considering the possibility of a delayed start, a shortened season, an interrupted season, whatever it might be. But at the same time, if it's going to start on time, if they have to plan for that too, right? So that's what the 6-week practice plan was all about. That's what these voluntary workouts are about. They can't just kind of, you know, wonder what's going to happen and then expect everyone to roll out of bed and kick off on August 29th. So they're going through the motions like the season is going to happen, but the truth is, and they know this, none of them know what the picture is going to look like 2 months from now.
So we've got SC and UCLA right here. SC is going to have a really good team if the season is played out. But I've heard that there's sort of a regionality going on, that the South East Conference may view this differently than the Pac-12 Conference, than the Big Ten Conference does. Are they on the same page, or is everybody kind of doing their own thing?
Well, to a certain extent, yes. I mean, they are the conference commissioners of the Power Five leagues are literally talking to each other every single day, and they're trying to be on the same page with the big issue things and the things that matter. But are they doing things different? Absolutely. The SEC has not mandated that everyone get tests before they return. Encouraged it, yes, but not mandated it. Neither has the ACC. Nor the Big 12. The Pac-12 has. They've set out there where you guys are. You guys they have to test the athletes, coaches, and staff before they return to campus. So you're already kind of seeing different decisions being made, but it will continue to go to the state and even the county level as far as how things happen and what unfolds from now until the fall and whenever there's no, for the unforeseen future, right? Because what we're looking at is government and local health officials and what they're determining. You know, I talked to Bernard Muir from Stanford earlier this week, and he said we've got a 50,000-seat stadium, and we'll go by what our county government tells us the capacity can be, which probably would be about 10,000, which he said we'll have to live with. Meanwhile, all the way out here on the East Coast, Clemson Athletic Director Dan Radakovich told me, hey, we're getting mobile tickets. We're trying to, you know, get as many people in the seats as we can. And he's talking from a state, South Carolina, where you're seeing increases. So it just depends on where people are at, what they can do. And that's from the school level to the conference level.
We're talking to Heather Dinich, who has a good piece up on ESPN.com, and you could hear Heather kind of describe it, too, on some of the TV she's been doing about the challenges that exist with playing college football. Heather, Texas announced that 13 football players have tested positive for the coronavirus. Is that scaring anybody? Is the fact that 13 people, which is a huge percentage of a football team, test positive, or did they know all along, we're going to have positive tests, this is just part of dealing with it?
Right. Everyone has said that I have spoken to from the beginning of this acknowledged we're going to have positive tests. The Florida's one of their health experts on campus who helped usher the Gators back said we are going to live with COVID-19. So they're pushing forward, right? So the question then becomes how many is too many? And I've been told that there's not a magic number for that. And when you look at programs like Texas and you see a number like that, yes, everyone should flinch, because guess what? They're not even lining up next to each other yet. They're just
right.
Coming on the campus, right? So let's start here. This is an experiment, an experimental phase. A lot of the confidence in continuing to move forward in spite of it comes from the campus's individual contact tracing system. Isolate them. Find out who they came into contact with and slow or stop the spread. How good is that system that the campus has in place? Okay, so that's where we are with voluntary workouts. But here's why Indiana and Ohio State are having these pledges that you may have heard about, right? Ohio State had every single football player signed a pledge, the Buckeye pledge, that whenever they leave the athletic facilities, they will continue to follow CDC guidelines. Social distance, wear masks, whatever it might be, right? Because there's a fear amongst athletic directors that while they are doing everything they can to protect them within the facility, they can't control them once they leave it. So they're saying, here, promise us when you leave that you're going to continue to be smart and safe to help us stop the spread, protect your teammates, and protect yourself.
Christine Brenner wrote a sobering column in USA Today, and here's sort of one of her questions. How many hospitalizations and deaths of players, coaches, staff, administrators, referees, and fans, if they are allowed, will we accept to have our beloved college and pro football this fall? Do you have a sense for what that might be?
Oh, that's such a heavy question.
I know.
Yeah, we thought, Heather, the answer could be one. That if you had one death, that it would they might shut it all down.
You would think, right? I don't know the answer to that, guys, but I'm glad that you raised that question, because one of the things that I've constantly heard in my reporting is they're Division I athletes. They're pro athletes. You know, they're either going to be asymptomatic or they'll go get over it really fast. Well, okay, maybe, but nobody knows about this virus. Nobody knows why it kills a 34-year-old and not somebody else. Sometimes that happens, right? So look at athletes with underlying conditions that we never knew about. James Conner at Pitt. What if he would have gotten it?
Yeah,
yeah. Good point.
I mean, is that what it takes? I don't know the answer to that question, you know? And it's not just about those athletes who are in great shape, they're healthy, yes, but what if an asymptomatic athlete infects your 65-year-old offensive coordinator, you know, with an underlying condition? So,
yeah, it's a very hard question. Yeah, it's a very hard question to answer. Heather, last thing for me, and I this is a little bit like back into straight football, not necessarily virus related. I know occasionally you talk to coaches in the Big 12. Mason and I disagree about what's going to happen with Mike Gundy. I don't think they're going to fire him. I think they have too much invested in him. Mace thinks there's just too much water.
I think he should be fired.
That taken on and that he's probably going to be fired. Do you think, based on everything that's come out over the last 3 days, that Mike Gundy is the coach at Oklahoma State if and when the season opens?
I mean, are you guys trying to burn my brain here in June? Because
yes, we are. We're trying to burn your brain in June.
Look, you know, it's interesting because when it first happened and Hubbard called him out, I thought, wow, he's going to learn from this. Everything's fine. And then the story continued to develop, and then my gut feeling was, this is too much. I don't know if he's going to survive this. And I think I'm continuing to lean towards the latter because the more former players, I feel like, who come out and speak up as well, that's a story that doesn't go away, right?
Well, and it also affects recruiting, Heather. I know I'm arguing against my side here, but to Mason's point, every other coach in that conference is going to go into those living rooms and say, why would you want to play for a guy with that history?
Right. No, it's a great point. And it's so hard because honestly, the thought I had when I was reading our emails from our news desk flying back and forth about this morning was, man, I've been so wrapped up in coronavirus reporting. I didn't think we'd be covering a coaching change. But I was like, wow, here we go. Who's going to be coach at Oklahoma State? So, I don't know. That might be jumping the gun, but it certainly came into my head.
All right. Heather, thank you very much for coming on. Appreciate it. And check out Heather's article on ESPN.com. We appreciate your time a lot.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
right,
Heather.
There's Heather Dinich.
By the way, Mace, I don't know if you saw this. ESPN has been working on a Hard Knocks type behind the scenes of Oklahoma State football for the last 3 months.
Really?
Can you imagine? Now, keep in mind, Oklahoma State.
This is just so happens. They just so happen to be working on this.
Totally coincidental.
Wow.
Yeah. Can you imagine if that comes out and they let them tell the truth? You know, sometimes they keep that stuff wrapped up, like you need cooperation of the school.
Yeah.
But if they let them tell the truth, can you imagine how good that would be? Like the most watched 30 for 30 ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Heather's right. The more former players and players that he faced, there's Alfred Williams, who's a popular talk show host in Denver, who says he used a racial slur during a game. The more of that stuff that comes out, the more it weighs down. And I don't know if he will be fired or not. I would fire him. All right, coming up next for you, we've got headlines. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, it is officially headlines time, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. And I think we've got fancy theme music for headlines. Yeah. The PGA Heritage Open in South Carolina started today. This is the second tournament of this year's PGA Tour after last week's highly rated debut. 800 people, golfers, tour officials, tour personnel, have all tested negative for COVID-19. The tour is operating within a bubble, and it's working really well. You could say perfectly. If you're the NBA, you're Major League Baseball, you're the NFL, don't you call the PGA right away to find out what they're doing right?
Sure. And also, I may, maybe go through with the commissioner of the PGA exactly what they're doing and what they're not doing. Because if they've got 800 people and no one has tested positive, then they're obviously... But I will say this, Mace. Golf lends itself to social distancing way better than NBA,
outdoors,
MLB.
Outdoors, individual sport.
Yeah, don't need to stand next to... I've been playing a lot of golf, and we just don't go within 6 feet of each other. So
golf might be the easiest of
right.
It major
lends
sports
itself to what Dr. Fauci, you know, encourages, and that is, you know, stay far apart from somebody and be tested regularly. So I think yes, it's encouraging. Yes, I would study it, but don't expect to have that type of success rate because those guys don't have to go near each other.
Right.
All right, Mace, the latest rumor of who will be the announcers for Monday Night Football is that ESPN would move Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit from college to the pros and use those two as the new Monday Night Football team. Which job do you think is better? Fowler and Herbstreit get to call the biggest college games during the regular season and then the top two postseason games, including the title game when we get to that Final Four. Assume they pay the same. What job would you rather have? Lead announcers on college football or Monday Night Football?
Well, I mean, I think the showcase job is Monday Night Football. I mean, Monday Night Football is an American tradition. ESPN has wanted to put together a new team for a long time to sort of set a team. And I think it's a great opportunity for Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit, who do a great job. The one thing I'll say is there's a lot more pressure that goes with it. Monday Night Football gets reviewed by a lot of writers, and people talk about it a lot. And if you don't shine for some reason in Monday Night Football, there's a lot of criticism that goes along with it, which this last crew found out. So I think college football is the easier, safer job, but the more high-profile job is Monday Night Football.
I actually disagree with you. I think that if you get the best college game every week, and they almost always did, and then you get to call one of the semifinals and the championship game, and those are all on ESPN as well. So you'd get all the power of ESPN. That the college national championship game is higher rated than any week of Monday Night Football, and I think the pageantry of college football is more fun. I think it's just a better overall experience. And remember,
wait a minute, go back a second. You're saying that the college football game of the week has a better rating than Monday Night Football?
No, I'm saying the national championship game.
Oh, championship game. Okay.
And you get to keep in mind, you get to do that. And also, one thing you didn't think about, Monday Night Football is not the showcase game of the week. Sunday Night Football is the game with Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. That's the best game of the week, and they get to hand pick that game. Monday Night Football for the past 4 or 5 years has been a lesser game. So I think I would stay in college, but I think either argument you could make.
All right, the University of Florida is getting rid of its gator bait cheer. Now, we're finding out all kinds of stuff about racist background for things we've been completely ignorant to. Do you know what this one is?
No.
For years, of course, fans respond with the chomping motion and their shouting of gator bait. African-American babies were used as alligator bait, according to the Jim Crow Museum of Racist Memorabilia at Ferris State University, citing newspaper articles and imagery from the late
Seriously?
1800s and early 20th century. Yeah. So they are getting rid of this cheer. I am just stunned. Yesterday we had Ole Miss. Ole Miss is what slaves would call the woman of the plantation. And so there are people that want Ole Miss, the University of Mississippi, to not call themselves Ole Miss anymore. I just think it goes to how embedded these racist images are in all of culture. That's just another one that I found to be just shocking.
Well, we had the story earlier in the week about Russell Westbrook's going to produce a movie or a miniseries about the Tulsa race riots. I was a history major at UCLA. I didn't even know what the Tulsa race riots were.
Nope.
I'd never heard of them. Steve Kerr had never heard of them, and he studied history, and he's in college. So I think we're finding out more and more, and I think the point that a lot of black people have been making is that they've been trying to tell us for a long time. Just no one's been willing to listen. So I think the fact that people not only are willing to listen, but then are willing to change and try and do something about it is a really good sign. All right, Mace. Photos have surfaced of people taking an exercise class at a gym called Inspire South Bay Fitness in Redondo Beach.
Okay.
Now, what has come out of these is that workout pods have been invented. You would be in your own plastic bubble. You could have people bring in dumbbells and other fitness equipment, but you get your own plastic workout pod in the gym, and you obviously have to schedule it and, you know, go in there at a specific time because there's only so many of these pods. Would this, the workout pod, get you to go back to the gym?
Yeah, I mean, it probably would. Although, let me just say, I think I can live without a gym now. I mean, I've got weights. I've got my yoga classes and my cardio classes that I do on my TV every day. I don't know if I ever really need to go back to the gym. That's one thing that might be a permanent change. But yeah, anything that makes the gym safer, which I think is probably one of the filthiest, most high-risk places that we will ultimately go back to. If it's a workout pod, a gigantic bubble, everything works with a bubble now. All you need is a bubble and you're safe. Workout bubble, NBA bubble. Yeah, I mean, if it's safe, I don't see any downside to it.
Well, the downside would be that you go work out in the bubble. Let's say you have COVID. I go in it right after you. If
well, I assume there would be some sort of sterilization process.
Right, but keep in mind this virus can be airborne. I mean, they could wipe everything down and you could still get it. But I think it helps. I think anything that makes people feel more comfortable helps. Like I told you, I went to a restaurant last Saturday night. I'm going to another one this Saturday night. But I'm kind of cheating because I'm sitting outside. And, you know, the staff is all wearing masks and everything. And so if you're sitting outside, that's not the same as going into a gym, even sealed inside of a plastic bubble.
Right.
So I don't think it will hurt. But I don't know if it'll actually get people to physically go back into the gym. We'll see.
49ers wide receiver Deebo Samuel has broken his foot in a workout. It will require surgery. He'll be gone for 12 to 16 weeks. How big a blow is this to San Francisco?
He was really good. He also, I believe, was their fastest wide receiver.
Yep.
So he's their stretch the field guy. I'm kind of wondering what that's going to be like for the Rams this year since they gave up on Brandon Cooks. Like, who stretches the field for the Rams? Is Robert Woods fast enough to do that? He probably is.
Probably. I mean, but Josh Reynolds might be that guy. They've got a number of guys that can potentially do it, take the top off of defense, but they don't have anybody. Last couple of years, they had Sammy Watkins. Then they had Brandon Cooks.
Right.
They don't have anybody obvious except for the kid that they drafted, maybe. I think his name is Van Jefferson in the third round.
Yeah, so maybe made the kid out of Florida. Maybe he could be the guy. But, you know, remember last year the Niners, the biggest play that Niner fans talk about in the Super Bowl is when Emmanuel Sanders couldn't get to that bomb thrown by Jimmy Garoppolo. And so if you don't have a really fast guy to stretch the field, the safeties can cheat. And jam up and you know, play tighter on your other wide receivers. So it's significant. I think it's a decent loss. All right, do we have time for one more? Are we done?
Yeah, one more.
Okay, so you asked yesterday why somebody would not wear a mask ever.
Yes.
Which I thought was a decent question. Former Major League Baseball player Aubrey Huff tweeted yesterday that he's done wearing a mask, and he tweeted why. Here's what he wrote. Quote, "It's not healthy to breathe in your own CO2 all the time, and it seems like everyone is a coronavirus expert. If I, God forbid, get the coronavirus, here's what I'm going to do. I'll go home, I'll get well, and I get back and live my life. I would rather die from coronavirus than live the rest of my life in fear and wear a mask." End quote. Does Huff's argument make any sense at all, or is this just nuts to you?
Well, we got to ignore all the other crazy stuff that Aubrey Huff has tweeted.
Right,
and
just deal with this argument.
Just deal with that argument. You know, that's a lot of people's view. I think to some degree we've entered an era where it's going to be survival of the smartest. Masks have been proven, according to the CDC, to help prevent you from getting it and help prevent you from spreading it. But it is survival of the smartest. It's, if you choose to go out there, and by the way, California now, the governor has said, no, you've got to wear a mask. I'm not sure how they're going to enforce that, but you've got to wear a mask. It does make a difference.
I have a more direct view of it. I'm going to wear a mask because I think it makes other people more comfortable.
Sure.
The discomfort of me wearing a mask is minimal. You know, it's a little bit of a pain, the you know what, but I mean,
sure, it's not fun.
But if there's, I don't know, like I went to Ralph's today.
Yep.
I don't know if I'm going to run into an older person at Ralph's that has a compromised immune system.
Was anybody not wearing a mask?
No, everybody was wearing one.
Everybody was, yeah.
But here's the thing. Like, let's say I run into an older person who is really worried about getting it, and I stress them out. You know, because they don't know my history. They don't know that I had a COVID test and I tested negative. I just don't want them to be uncomfortable. And that's why I wear a mask. It doesn't have anything to... Aubrey Huff made this all about his comfort level.
Yeah.
I wear a mask more than anything else to make other people feel at ease. And I think it's a respect of courtesy more than anything else, don't you think?
Yeah, I totally do. And if I see somebody not wearing a mask, I immediately judge them.
Yeah, but just, do you say anything?
I can't help but judge them. No, I just walk as far away from them as I possibly can.
I did. Where did I go last week? I just had a brain cramp, and I walked. Oh, I walked into a CVS.
And you forgot to wear your mask?
I did. I got about 5 steps inside, and I went, oh, my God, what are you doing? And I immediately turned around, went back to my car, and got the mask.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just forgot.
Yeah.
For a second, but that's the only time that's happened.
Easy to do. All right, coming up next for you. The Rams and the Chargers are going to be on Hard Knocks this year, and I think it is a stupid idea.
And we also had that story with Heather about Mike Gundy. There we have more people weighing in on whether or not Mike Gundy is going to survive this. You'll hear that those opinions as well.
Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Not long.
No, Ireland would be leaving the bubble every day to play golf.
Exactly. And by the way, Morales would be coming with me.
I think I'm getting burnt on working at home. I'm getting burnt on working from home. I want to get back. I'm itching to get back to the studio.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be the first. Michael Thompson and I are going to be the first ones back in.
Oh,
because we're going to have to do the games from there.
Well, if you're allowed back in, I should be allowed back in.
I agree.
Yeah. By the way, what time of day, I'm going to ask you to speculate, what time of day do you think Laker games are going to wind up being when they come back at the end of July?
I don't know is the real answer because they haven't set the schedule yet. But I will say this. I think what they will do is try and maximize audience best they can.
Right.
In other words, I don't think they're going to play a lot of Laker games at noon. Okay.
Right.
I think that they're going to put the Lakers on at a time where the most amount of people could see them.
Yep.
Now, whether that's 5 o'clock or 7:30, I don't know. My guess is that would be more 5 o'clock. You know, like the NBA finals start at 6. So I think you're going to see LeBron, who's the biggest draw. The Lakers are the biggest draw. I think they're going to have a lot of games in the evening, like 5, 6, 7 o'clock starts. That's
okay.
My guess. But I don't know because I'm not in those meetings and I don't know what they're doing. And maybe other teams would complain about not being in prime time and they would have to even it out. But I think their goal is going to be to maximize revenue. And if you put the Lakers on when most people can get to a TV, that would
sure.
do that.
All right. The Rams and Chargers are going to be featured on Hard Knocks this year. I think this is absolutely stupid. Absolutely stupid. First time that two teams will be featured, and I know we've got the brand new stadium, and we've got SoFi, and everybody's excited. I couldn't be more excited. I have a personal seat license. I have season tickets, all that stuff. But it's a very weird year. I know why the NFL is doing it. At the same time, the last thing, and by the way, Sean McVay was asked today on a conference call how they're going to social distance with around the team this year. He said, we are going to social distance but play football. I don't get it. I don't think anybody gets it right now. I don't think anybody understands it. And why would you want to introduce more people to your training camp? Why would you want to introduce an HBO crew into your training camp? Camera people and sound people and all the stuff that goes along with shooting Hard Knocks. Why would you want more people in your training facility?
Well, let's wait and see what protocols they lay out. For example, if they go in to the Rams camps and the Chargers camps and they just put remote cameras everywhere, they put them in the coach's office, they put them in the locker room, they put a camera on like the coach's tower, I think that it maybe you could do it that way. You could do it with all remote cameras. There's no guarantee it's going to be exactly what we're used to.
Right.
Now, if it is, you're 100% right. If they send a full camera crew in there and they got guys running around shooting practice and doing Hard Knocks like they know, because I love Hard Knocks. I've seen every episode of every year.
Have you noticed a trend with Hard Knocks, by the way?
The team doesn't always do very well.
Last 6 years, the team has missed the playoffs.
Well, and they didn't do Jared Goff any favors when he was a rookie.
Nope.
I thought they made him come off really dumb.
I would say they actually damaged the way people view Jared Goff. They made him look stupid.
Yeah.
And I thought it was unbelievably unfair. And he's not a dumb guy, but they just chose moments so that they could build a narrative. That's what those shows are all about. It's like, how do we build a narrative around certain personalities on a team? And the one with Jared Goff was, Jared Goff's just ain't that bright. By the way, the Rams were on Hard Knocks in 2016. They went 4-12.
And the Raiders were on last year and didn't make
the
playoffs.
They went 7-9. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think your point is a good one. And I agree with you that if they're adding more bodies to the practice facility, it just makes no sense. It just doesn't add up. All right, so we were talking earlier about Mike Gundy and whether or not he's going to survive. Gundy did a third apology today. The first one he did when he was standing next to Chuba Hubbard, who was the leading rusher in the country last year, who initially called
Chuba.
Him out for Chuba. Thank you. But I've done that like 3 days.
Yeah, I started with that. It took me a day to learn how to pronounce it.
So Chuba Hubbard is the running back that was the leading rusher in the country last year. And then Gundy did this goofy thing where he apologized and then Chuba apologized for not going to Gundy directly first. And it just looked totally staged. Then, speaking as totally staged, Gundy came out and read off a teleprompter and made it sound like he had no idea that OAN was bad, like that no one ever told him. And now today he was actually doing interviews with people, still trying to explain his position. Funch, do we have some of that? Okay, here's Gundy's most recent. I think this is his third apology, number three.
I didn't know that some of the stances they had taken. I didn't know that. But then you look at it and say, okay, I was a dumbass. I put the shirt on not knowing enough about the shirt. I understood exactly why the players got frustrated when they found that out or whatever, however they found out what it was. I didn't know. I didn't know till the next day. Well, I knew that night, but I didn't confirm it till I did a little research. And I was like, what a dumbass. So that was my fault. The way the players feel about me and I upset them and broke their heart, that bothered me more than losing games. And that's the truth. But that's why now that as humans, when we make mistakes, the only thing we can do is admit we're wrong, own up to it, be humble, accept critical people, criticism, make it better and move forward.
So even having said that, there are still people that feel Mike Gundy's not going to survive this and that he deserves to be fired.
Yeah.
Among those people are Paul Feinbaum, who, of course, is one of the top college football analysts at ESPN. Here's Feinbaum talking about Mike Gundy.
Mike Gundy is still the same buffoon today that he was 4 days ago. And, you know, he has tried to inarticulately talk his way out of something. that he just can't do. His explanations become more ridiculous every time he opens his mouth. The only thing I do agree with him on is when he said yesterday, I'm a dumbass. I mean, nobody's disagreeing with him on that. But that's still no reason why he should be the head football coach at Oklahoma State. I mean, so many people have come at anyone who has criticized him and say, you know, why would you fire a guy over a T-shirt? That's not the issue. Anyone who's reasonable knows that this is about his conduct over many, many years. And already this week, he embarrassed himself by wearing the T-shirt. He embarrassed himself by trying to make his player apologize. And then, you know, he continues to embarrass himself, then by flipping and flopping and saying that he didn't realize what this was all about. I mean, 3.5 weeks into the most intense social and racial inequity conversation in my lifetime, he still didn't get it until his players told him. I mean, that's just patently absurd.
Yeah, I think you know by the third time you're apologizing, you're in trouble. If it requires apology number three, it's not going your way. And he was also Alfred Williams, who's a talk radio personality in Denver, was also an All-American outside linebacker for Colorado. 31 years ago, he says that in a game against Oklahoma State then, Gundy, who was the quarterback, used the N-word. In that game, Gundy was upset about a sack. He said, quote, I just know he was really upset with it, and he was running off the field and called me the N-word. I want an apology from him, and I want to see him have some growth. If he denies that he said that, I have at least 20 people who will vouch for what happened that day.
If that's true, if 20 people come out, I don't know if he survives this. I've said before, I'm very sensitive to cancel culture, to people making mistakes and then losing their livelihood because of it, because I think we do it too much. And so I probably would allow Gundy to apologize and continue. But here's the problem, Mace. If you take that position, think about what recruiting is like moving forward. Mike Gundy comes into your living room. You're a top athlete. Chances are you're African-American. He makes his presentation as to why you can go to Oklahoma State. And Lincoln Riley walks in right after that to tell you to go to Oklahoma. And Riley just says, look, man, why would you play for a guy with that history? And in case you haven't heard, here's his history. And I don't know how you get over that recruiting hurdle.
See, I put this in a different category than cancel culture. To fire a guy, you're not denying him his livelihood. It's free to go somewhere else and coach.
Right, but where...
You're just firing... He's not qualified to head your college football program.
Right, but who's going to hire him as a head coach after this?
If that's the case, why do you want him? In other words, if he's unhirable, why would you want him to be your coach?
Well, he's unhirable because of this scandal. I would say it's the same thing as, you know, Sark has never gotten another head coaching job.
Yeah.
Right. He still could.
Oh, I think he definitely will. I think Sark is eventually going to get a head coaching job.
But he hasn't yet. And once it's very difficult when you get accused of being a racist to walk that back. And if
right,
he is,
but that's already done.
Yeah, if he is a racist, then he deserves everything that's coming to him. But it would seem to me that Mike Gundy at 21 could be a different guy than Mike Gundy at 45.
Except for the T-shirt, for a radical, radical, nutty, conspiracy-driven right-wing network that is called Black Lives Matter, a terrorist organization.
Yeah, but I mean, if you take him at his word and he didn't know that, then you believe him. But if you don't believe him, then you should fire him. If you think he's lying about that, you should fire him.
Yeah, but I would personally fire him. I don't know if he will be fired or not. I'm not predicting whether he will be fired or not. But I'm with Feinbaum. I think he should be fired. All right, but not everybody agrees. 877-710-ESPN. A lot of people are on your side of that, John. I think that Gundy should keep his job. I personally think he should be fired. 877-710-ESPN. We'll get to that. Plus, we'll get to one of the top stories of the day, which is that baseball.
Oh, God.
I guess can we say it's a top story when there's no actual? We always say, how do you push the story forward?
No,
the story
there was
has
news
not
today.
Been pushed forward.
Except that there was a whole new proposal, and both sides are apparently up in arms about it.
Yeah, okay, we'll get to that, too, coming up for you. Mesa and I, we're losing you there. Mesa and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Hey, it's Thursday, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN, and still no baseball deal. There is some back and forth, though. The players have made a new proposal. They want 70 games. The owners have offered 60 games. I mean, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but it seems like there's only a 10-game difference at that point. You're very, very close to getting a deal done. Why not seal it? Why not seal that deal?
So what's holding it up, do you think?
Stubbornness on the part of players. I mean, at 50 games, apparently, they get 37% of their salary for the year. At 60 games, a little bit more than that. The more games they get, the more salary they get. So it really is a matter of holding out for more money on the case of the players. And it may just be that it's not there at this point. Time is running out for there to be a 70-game season. You'd have to play almost every day in order to get the World Series in by the end of October, which is what players and epidemiologists think is going to be necessary. So why not settle at 60 games and say, this is what it is. We can't do any better than this.
I don't understand it. I don't understand why this isn't done. I don't understand why. If the players could get to a number that starts with six, I would take it and run. So hopefully they will. Hopefully by tomorrow when we come on the air, we'll have something worked out. Because at this point, it doesn't make sense. I don't understand what we're not doing. Hey, do you know what this is the anniversary of?
June the 18th. No.
Clayton Kershaw's no-hitter. And
this was such a great story. I love this day.
Okay, so but here's the weird thing. I want to ask you about something because you're kind of a baseball traditionalist. You know, the only reason he didn't have a perfect game, he had no walks.
Hanley Ramirez.
Right. Hanley Ramirez made an error.
Yeah.
Why is that Kershaw's fault?
It's not Kershaw's fault, but there have only been 23 perfect games, and it requires that everybody play perfectly, not just the pitcher.
Yeah, I just
that's
think
what a perfect game. It's the reason it's so rare is that everybody must play perfectly. Now, I was doing the game for Sportsnet LA that night. I was in the studio. It was me and Oral and Nomar, me and Oral and Ned Coletti doing the game that night. So, you know how I feel about no hitters. I was just I was so excited. It was gut wrenching when Henley Ramirez made that error. But to come on after a game and do a post-game show with Oral Hershiser, who, by the way, I got to watch the game with, and there's nothing quite like watching a game with a professional athlete who is so recently removed, a pitcher who's sort of painting a picture the entire time of what's going through Clayton Kershaw's head. That was one of the great nights of my career. But, John, I think the answer to that question is, there have only been 23 of them because they require everybody to play perfectly.
Well, my argument would be, though, that if it was a walk or a wild pitch or something that the pitcher did or an error on Kershaw, then, yeah, that should cost him his perfect game. But he didn't do anything wrong, and he got screwed out of a perfect game. It just seems ridiculously
unfair. Hanley Ramirez was such a clank at shortstop. It was such a gimme play too. It was such a clank play. I remember it so clearly.
I can't remember. Was it late in the game or early in the game?
It was late in the game. I want to say it was the sixth or the seventh inning. That Hanley Ramirez clanked a ground ball. Hey, let's go to the phones. Max from Sherman Oaks is online. Hey, Max, what are you doing, man?
Remember the 12th of June, corporate Greg took down Fast Track. It happened so quick and it hits like a brick as the reason for it is whack. Just
there you go. Thank you very much.
Well, as usual, Max, very well written.
You know, John, I also have a good limerick about it, too. Can I read that real quick?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Sure, why not?
We're pro-limerick.
Greg Bergman moved up at the station. I think he likes Mace on vacation. Dropping Fast Track was bad, but Greg is really glad doing the bidding of the corporation.
That's pretty
good. Oh, I like that. I like that.
I knew you would.
You've got a gift, Max.
I called up. What's that?
You've got a gift.
Hey, you know what? I am the Obi-Wan Kenobi to John's Yoda when it comes to limericks, you know?
There you go.
He's an inspiration. I called up because I was listening to the conversation about Mike Gundy and John talking about how, you know, he doesn't really, you know, like cancel culture. And I hear that. I do. But, you know, I thought about this for a second. Let's think about it. How many African Americans and people of color generally, also women too, of course, haven't even had the opportunity to get fired from a job because they were denied the job in the first place, you know? So, like, these people who get to these positions of authority, you know, whether it's the head coach at a D1, you know, college football school, or, you know, a politician or somebody in business, a CEO, you know, they need to understand that, right, that's not a God-given right to have that job. You have a First Amendment right in this country, absolutely, but you also have to bear the consequences of that. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Mike Gundy, but I think we got to get to a point in this country where, you know, right is right and wrong is wrong. And so long as people are enabled to keep doing the wrong things and continue to be in positions of authority, we're not going to get anywhere. That's the whole thing with this whole police thing. You know,
yeah,
if you do
fair enough.
Wrong, you should be held accountable.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I just think that Max, at the end of the day, if he gets fired, if they fire Gundy over this, he's done in this profession. He'll never get another gig.
He could be a coordinator. He could work his way back up.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe.
That's what you mentioned,
John,
Sark. That's
the point.
That's what Sark's doing.
Right. He just keeps getting offensive coordinator
jobs,
right?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Max, for the phone call.
Thanks, Max.
I don't know if he'll survive it at this point. I think he's going to be at such a recruiting disadvantage that may be the reason they get rid of him. I don't know how you can keep him.
All right. Coming up next for you, Kendrick Perkins on Dwight Howard and his position along with Kyrie Irving and Avery Bradley and what it means going forward. Plus, what Kendrick Perkins very candidly thinks of Kyrie in general. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.